Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
Hey, hey, everybody. You made it through yet another Monday workday. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express. Exciting weekend of football action, Sean.
Very exciting weekend. And, of course, we thought last weekend was, you know, was a tough weekend. There were a lot of close games that were involved. But, man, this weekend proved to be even tougher. A lot of these games down the stretch. I mean, if you're a fantasy league player or a fantasy league, player, and you're involved in whatever league that you're involved in, I mean, it's got to drive you crazy. And, you know, as I've mentioned before on numerous occasions, not only do I play fantasy league, I also do the Pick'em League. And if you do one of those, oh my goodness, I can't even begin to tell you, not only do you have to pick which team should win, there's a level of confidence that you have to pick 1 through 16. And of course, this past weekend, there was only 14 games with the bye, but you have to pick, hey, this is my most confident pick. And I mean, the way the scores were, you're looking at Baltimore and Cleveland 33-30, and you know, Indy and Houston went down the stretch, and Kansas City, Chicago, and man, dare I say it, Cincinnati, Seattle. But I mean, the list goes on and how close these games were down the stretch. And you know, the parity is starting to rear its head in the NFL.
And who would have thought quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, Josh McCown, would be your number one fantasy quarterback for the weekend? Unless you're his relative or a huge Cleveland Brown fan, there's no way anybody saw that coming.
Yeah, you know, Josh McCown has been a journeyman for quite some time, and you know, he's found his way around the league, you know, something similar to, you know, kind of like a Matt Hasselbeck right now. But, you know, he thought that he was going to be the staple in Oakland at once upon a time, and that just didn't work out. The schemes didn't mesh, or he didn't mesh with the scheme, actually. And so he's played in a lot of different teams, and now here he is in Cleveland, and there was, you know, threats at the beginning of the year that maybe Johnny Manziel would take over his spot. But yeah, Sean, I mean, man, Josh McCown looks like, you know, a pretty decent quarterback, or at least he had a good weekend this past weekend.
And you mentioned parity in the NFL. That's what they want. They want every team to have a shot. And there's some surprise teams not doing well. The Baltimore Ravens lost to the Browns. Baltimore 1-4, and some people picked them to challenge the Patriots in the AFC.
You know, and you know, I know that it's just past the first quarter of the season, but even though Baltimore is off to this sluggish start, you have a lot of teams that are 2-3, 3-2, to where they can actually try to make a run at this thing if they can get things going. But you know, they don't have the continuity. Or actually, I shouldn't say that, Sean. I shouldn't say that they don't have the continuity. What I should say is that they haven't figured out a way to close out the football game. And, you know, when they lost to Cleveland yesterday, it showed. And, you know, the same thing when they were here in Oakland. They couldn't find a way to seal the deal. And it's tough. It's tough when you start out the season that way, and it's tough to try to find that rhythm. But Baltimore's going to have to do it.
And finish has been a problem all around the league, and most notably here in the Pacific Northwest with the Seahawks, and that's something that Pete Carroll is heavy into. You finish the game, you win the game in the fourth quarter, and we'll have a lot more time to get into that later in the hour. It's going to be a great show. We will have big-time guests here shortly. Ryan Divish, the Seattle Times Mariners beat writer. So we'll get into what is happening there on the corner of Edgar and Dave at Safeco Field and what might be happening behind the scenes with the changes, not only in the front office, but a new manager search underway. Ryan Divish joining us shortly. And then, yeah, lots and lots of football, college football, the NFL, all kinds of things to get to here tonight, Sean.
Yeah, you know, I look forward to having Ryan on. Of course, you know, he covers the Mariners like nobody's business as an insider. And, of course, you know, would love to get his insight as far as what's going on in Major League Baseball and the playoffs. And to be honest with you, Sean, a lot of my teams are not in it. I do have an invested interest. It's actually, you and I both have an invested interest of, you know, with the Toronto Blue Jays. Of course, Darryl Brown, a guest here on the double, and his team, because he's a scout for the Blue Jays, his team doing quite well in the playoffs. And so, you know, kind of watching to see what comes about here. But, you know, I know the Cubs have done a good job as well. So I'm looking forward to talking with Ryan about some things.
Yeah, Sean, there's a lot of former Athletics and former Mariners that are playing in the postseason that have moved on to other teams.
You know, and of course, as I mentioned, the Blue Jays, got to keep my eye on Josh Donaldson and what he's doing, man. And you know, it pains me. It pains me greatly to see all of the awesome Oakland A's, the All-Stars for that matter, that wind up going to other teams and doing some awesome things as well. And, you know, Yunis Cespedes, I know he's had some injuries here with the Mets, and, you know, kind of watching them to see what's going on as well. And, of course, as you mentioned, former Mariners as well, with Adrian Beltre doing some great things and, you know, a few other players that are playing right now. And so that's what keeps us watching as October looms and, you know, these teams are moving on into the playoffs.
Let's head out to the holysmokenuts.com phone line to welcome in big-time guest number one tonight, and that is Ryan Divish, the Seattle Times Mariners beat writer. Ryan, thanks for your time tonight.
How are you guys doing?
Well, good. Ryan, thanks for being on, man. And of course, we're talking a little bit about the Mariners, man, and there's some big things going on. Of course, McClendon being released of his duties. And so, you know, what kind of word is out there in the early goings as far as the next manager for the Seattle Mariners?
You know, it's interesting. I've heard a lot of different names, but it seems to be the main guy that's been mentioned most often is a guy named Tim Bogar, who was a special assistant for Jerry DePoto with the Angels the season before DePoto resigned. And so that's been a lead guy. He's a guy that's got some managerial experience, 6 years of managing in the minor leagues. He was a bench coach for Joe Maddon with the Rays, and he was a bench coach with the Rangers. And when Ron Washington resigned in 2014, Bogar was the interim manager for, I think, what, 18 games or so. So he's got some experience. He's probably the clubhouse favorite. There's some other guys out there. Gary DeSarcina, who's the third base coach with the Angels, the guy that DePoto's comfortable with. And then also, it's kind of a more of a left field candidate, but Omar Vizquel, who's been coaching with the Indians. DePoto is a guy that is a friend of his, and they really like each other. And DePoto first got him into coaching, so I think maybe that's a guy you look at as well.
Well, yeah, when you mentioned little old Omar Vizquel, of course, a Mariner favorite, and of course that could be a good thing or a sign of good things to come for Bogar to come in. Now, Ryan, what do you pick or what do you pinpoint as far as the main reason why the Mariners just kind of fizzled out in the late goings of the 162-game season?
You know, it's, I mean, I think there are a lot of little things that go into a baseball season where you can point to. I mean, there was a stretch where they really didn't hit, particularly with runners in scoring position. And they didn't, you know, there was a stretch where the starting pitching wasn't great and they had a couple of pitchers injured. But pretty much consistently throughout most of the season, the bullpen was mediocre to less than average. I mean, it was pretty poor at times, and I think that was a bigger thing. They had a lot of bad losses where they had leads, and they had a lot of games that they were in early that the bullpen turned into 5 or 6 run laughers, and I think that was the consistent part. I mean, when you have 3 different closers throughout a season, that's usually not a good idea, or that's not a good sign that things are going right for your bullpen, and they used 3, and I don't think any of them were that great. If I had to pick one reason, I think that was the biggest issue.
Ryan, your early thoughts on new GM Jerry DePoto?
He's you know, he's real organized, and I mean, he says all the right things, and I guess that's probably important. But from what everybody I've talked to, they really like that he communicates, but he listens, you know, that he has a lot of meetings and he takes input from everybody, that, you know, he is going to ultimately make the decision, but he's somebody that believes in gathering as much information as possible, whether it comes from a guy that just started with the organization or somebody who's been there for 20 years. He wants to hear all of it and then process it and go through that. You know, in the past, under Zarenczyk, I think that he was, there wasn't a lot, it was mostly just him making all these decisions that, you know, he didn't allow for others to kind of do that. It was his input and his input only. And DePoto seems to be a little different. So I think that's big. I mean, some of the stuff that kind of got lost because of that. You know, he's got a lot of energy. He brings a pretty good vibe. I think people will like that as well. And it's just anybody that's different than Zarenczyk after this year and 7 years of not making the postseason and really only two winning records, a change needed to be made. And whoever was going to probably be considered an upgrade from what they had before.
With the issues DePoto and Mike Socha had down in Anaheim, it's really not much of a surprise that Lloyd McClendon was released of his duties.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we asked DePoto about it. He said that it wasn't as big of a deal as some people think, but, you know, it's going to affect you somehow. And if you're starting a new regime and this is your second job and the first one didn't go right, you want to start it under. You want to start this one, especially given the freedom that he's been given. You want to start this one under optimal conditions, and you know, bringing in a guy that you're comfortable with, that you guys have, that has the same vision as you on how to win games and how to assemble a roster and how to do all these things. I think you're just smart. I mean, I don't think that McClendon is vastly different from DePoto on all things, but I think he just kind of wanted to. You know, he had his ways of doing things, and they weren't exactly the same as Jerry's. And I think DePoto just thought, well, why should I just kind of deal with this for a year and see if it works when I know I can bring in a guy that I have a comfort level with and a relationship with that I know will work. And so I think that's kind of what he looked at.
Ryan Divish joining us here on The Double. Now, Ryan, last year about this time, Sean Wally and myself were talking about our favorite teams, the Seattle Mariners and the Oakland A's, as teams on the rise. And, of course, the Oakland A's playing Kansas City in that loser out, that wild card game, if you will. We're thinking that both of these teams are going to be back, meaning Oakland and Seattle. But yet here comes the Houston Astros and the Texas Rangers. What do you attest to that? Because, I mean, is there a blueprint to going from the cellar to becoming a contender? Because if that was the case, then Seattle should have, you know, been contenders a long time ago.
Yeah, I thought the Astros would be better this year. I thought they'd be right around 500, even a little over. They were flirting with it last year, and they had so much talent, so much young talent coming up that I thought that was possible. And they just got off to such a fast start. I mean, that you know, there was really nowhere to go. It would have taken kind of a colossal collapse for them to fall out of it completely. And they kind of even did that by dropping to the wild card instead of winning the division. But they just had so many guys, and a lot of things went right. And so I think that was a big – and then, like, with Texas, Texas was terrible when I first saw them. I thought they were one of the worst teams in the league. You know, they didn't have a bunch – of guys were hurt at the time. Their bullpen was atrocious. At that point, Prince wasn't really hitting yet, and Sin Soo Choo really wasn't hitting. But, you know, as the season went on, they just kind of found a little bit of a nucleus of guys. They moved Delino DeShields to center field, and Prince started hitting, and then Choo figured it out after the All-Star break, and Moreland got healthy. Rougned Odor came back from the minors after some attitude issues more than anything that they wanted to clear up. All those guys kind of came together, and I thought they had a nice dynamic. And then the starting pitching was just good enough. I don't think it was great, but it was just good enough to win games. And they won a bunch of close games too, but I didn't think they were by any means like an elite playoff team. I thought they were good enough to get to 500, but, you know, from a talent standpoint, the Mariners certainly had as much, if not more talent as the Rangers, but, you know, when you have, because it's kind of like the Rangers are built kind of like the Mariners. They have those three, there's 2-3-4 hitters or 3-4-5 hitters of Beltre and Chu and Fielder kind of carry that team with pieces around. Well, it's similar to what the Mariners are trying to do with Seager, Cano, and Cruz, but just the other pieces work together a little bit better. Now, I mean, I saw the A's early, and Billy Butler looked awful, and they didn't have any pitching whatsoever. And I was like, beyond Sonny Gray, and I thought, you know, this is a bad team. And they gave up their best shortstop prospect for Jeff Samardzija last year, and they brought in Marcus Semien, who committed 35 errors at shortstop. I was like, it's not working. But, no, I don't know. If you look at the games that those teams played against each other, they were all pretty competitive for the most part. And you throw in the Angels, those were pretty competitive games. Like, the Mariners, for some reason, were able to beat up on the Rangers a little bit, but they couldn't beat the Astros. And then the Astros couldn't beat the Rangers, and the Angels couldn't beat the Rangers but could beat the Astros. It was kind of weird how that all worked.
Now, Ryan, you talk about the Texas Rangers, and it's a little odd to see them pulling things together. How much of baseball late in the season is an actual skill that the batters are actually getting things right finally, and it just being luck?
Well, it's all a little bit of luck. You never know. I mean, the ball bounces one way or the other, and you know, there is a lot of luck involved. But I mean, like with Chu, if you look at his numbers before the All-Star break and after, it's just like stunning. I mean, he hit like almost 370 after the All-Star break, and his on-base percentage is over 4.4 something, and you know, he really dominated, and that was kind of the piece that had been missing. You know, when he was right, that just gave their lineup so much more depth. And then they did some stuff differently. I mean, I'll give Jeff Banister some credit. They did some bunting and played a little small ball with the Shields and Elvis Andrews and some of those guys, and they had some speed kind of at the top and the back end of the order that caused some problems. They did that to the Mariners. They really bunted the Mariners to death at times. We saw that earlier in the playoffs as well. They just kind of played with the hand you're dealt. I think that's a big part of baseball. You play so long, and your roster is never the same. It's how do you adjust when your roster, when you have to make adjustments, when you face adversity, if a player is out or whatever, do you have the depth to bring somebody in? Do you have a quality backup that can come in and play? And how do you adjust with those backups? Because you might not be able to play the same way. And I thought Texas did that, and they were smart. They added a couple of pieces, Will Venable and a few outfielders, just to kind of to massage along the way, because they were playing some pretty suspect guys early, but they went out and got guys to make their rosters better. And then that's different. I mean, if the Mariners were a little bit better after the All-Star break, if they'd played, you know, with some sort of a pulse and didn't give up all those leads in New York and came out strong, they would have added pieces. They wouldn't have subtracted, but they weren't in a position to add because they had played so poorly coming out of the break.
Ryan, Robinson Cano, a big issue in the first half, not hitting the ball well. Second half seemed to correct it. 24 million reasons to be happy he's in Seattle every time he cashes a check. But do you think overall he's happy that he's playing for the Mariners?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think he likes Cruz. I think he likes Felix. I mean, you know, there were some parts from New York you're hearing that he didn't like Seattle, he liked New York better. Well, you know what? I like Montana better than Seattle because I'm from there. I mean, Cano has lived in New Jersey part of his life, spent most of his early adult years living in New York. Maybe he likes it better, but I think he likes the team he's on. I think he likes the situation he's in. It's just, I think people make a lot of big deal about that. These guys, when you have the kind of money they make, they're probably pretty happy wherever they're at because they're living pretty comfortably. But I don't know. I think the bigger struggles were this year for him early on. He just wasn't swinging at strikes. He swung at a lot of bad pitches. He wasn't completely healthy. He had some stomach issues. He dealt with more of the effects of the stomach issues, just lost some strength and stuff like that. But, you know, I think we saw in the second half, I think after July 1st, he hit 330. With about a 900 OPS, that's more the guy we saw last year the full season. I think, you know, to come next year, he's going to probably be a little bit better than he'd been all year.
Now, Ryan, you mentioned being from Montana, and I know you are proud of that, and you get back there as often as you can. I first experienced Montana in February with the Harlem Globetrotters, and man, it was gorgeous going to just about every city. And I know I touched base with you on Facebook, where to go eat and things like that, and appreciate your recommendations. And it really is beautiful country.
Yeah, it's home. I mean, it's for me, living in Seattle area, the traffic and stuff, I need to get back to Montana every so often just to get that little reality check and where life slows down a little bit.
Ryan Divish joining us here on The Double. And Ryan, you know, I too have had the chance to go to Montana, and I can tell you that's God's country out there, the big sky. And, you know, there isn't a dull place out there. I mean, you go out there for rest and relaxation, but the views are so majestic and pretty. I mean, you're talking about Whitefish, Montana. You're just beautiful area out there, whether it's Missoula, Bozeman, you name it. I enjoy getting out there.
Yeah, you can really, I mean, if you're an outdoors person or if you just, there's a little bit of everything there. Yeah, it is smaller and there's not as many people, which sometimes you like to go. I love the fall there. Summers there are great, too. I'm not a big fan of the winters anymore. After living in Seattle area, Seattle in the Northwest, I've become kind of a weather wimp. I don't like the extreme cold of Montana. But, you know, you give me the fall or the summer, I'm happy.
Now, I have to ask you here. I'm thinking maybe you are a Montana Grizzlies fan.
Yeah, that's my school.
And so, you know, the Grizzlies are kind of getting off to a shaky start. You know, I'm circling the schedule here for November the 14th with, you know, in Missoula, where Eastern Washington will come in to invade Missoula. Let's hope that there is some implications, big sky implications on the line around that time.
Yeah, I used to go to the Eastern game, you know, having covered preps around Tacoma and Seattle, and I knew a lot of the kids at Eastern used to recruit, so it was kind of fun going there, but I've been to the last five, I think, Montana Eastern games, and Montana hasn't won any of them, so I pretty much decided that I'm not going this year. I'm not going to watch that. I Bo Baldwin is a really nice guy, the head coach at Eastern. He's from Tacoma. Like him a lot, but I just, no, I'm not going to go all the way back to Montana to watch that kind of a beatdown, so I'm going to do other things instead. I'll watch it on TV, but going there and seeing that in person and not something I haven't enjoyed, because Eastern's loaded. They're going to be really good this year. They're doing really well this year.
Yeah, they got off to a little bit of a rocky start, lost their first two. Of course, the second game was a close nail-biter, but they've gotten things started in the big sky. They squeaked one, you know, got one, won a close game there Saturday against Cal Poly. And of course, Montana played Cal Poly close as well. So I like the big sky. I like what's going on, you know, up and coming teams. Look out for Portland State as well, man.
Yeah. I'm going to actually go down to Portland and watch Montana play at Portland State. That should be interesting. Yeah. The big sky, it's like, it's never dull because everybody scores about 50 points a game.
Ryan Divish, Seattle Mariners beat writer for the Seattle Times. Thank you very much for your time and insight tonight.
No problem. Take it easy, guys.
Thanks for being on, Ryan.
There goes Ryan Divish with insight on all things Mariners, Montana, and Big Sky football.
Yeah, man. That we got our fill there and didn't get a chance to really talk as much as we wanted to about Major League. Well, actually, we did touch the playoffs quite a bit, but I want to talk to him a little bit more about Montana, and we'll get a chance to do that some other time. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about all those cool things that happened over the weekend. So keep it locked in. You are listening to the best sports talk on The Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally with Sean Boyd. And man, Sean, now it's time. Let's get into it. The big games over the weekend. You want to start college? You want to go NFL? It's your call.
You know, either way, man, I know we could start college. And of course, you know, there are some games that, you know, we didn't think that were going to be as big, but, you know, they had the Pacific Northwest ties in mind. And of course, Thursday night. Actually, we can go back to Thursday night where the Huskies played USC, Sean Wally, and that was a shocker to me because I did not see the Huskies beating Steve Sarkisian and the USC Trojans.
The 17th ranked USC Trojans at that.
Yeah.
And Chris Peterson had that defense for the Dogs flying all over that field, and I don't think USC expected what they got.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was tough goings for USC all around. And, you know, Cody Kessler had two interceptions. And you know, and if you can pick off a decent quarterback like Cody, then, you know, it's going to be a long night. And the Huskies came to play. You know, what I was more excited about is the Huskies have a long tradition as far as running backs are concerned. And we're always wondering who that next running back is. And Myles Gaskin, man, just tremendous, a tremendous game. Ran for 134 yards and, you know, had a fourth quarter touchdown. And, you know, everything was a go for the Huskies. And, you know, kind of it was a head scratcher at the time. And I'm thinking, wow, what in the world is going on in the land of Troy? And then, Sean, we find out, man, you know, today that some crazy things are going on in Los Angeles as far as USC is concerned. And, man, Steve Sarkisian is no longer the head coach. Is that a shocker to you?
Not with coming to light everything that is in his personal life and that he's been showing up to games, practices, booster events, drunk. And, of course, everybody knows about the online video that surfaced of him at the big pre-season summer booster event, and he was slurring his words and everything at the podium. Why he was even allowed to go to the podium is beyond me. But, you know, he's going through a divorce. He's got the added pressures of coaching at USC, where he previously was on Pete Carroll's staff when Pete Carroll was the head coach there at USC. And those guys are still good friends. And Pete Carroll said today it breaks his heart what Steve is going through, but they are in communication, and Steve wants to get right. And hopefully this is his time and his chance, because what a fall from grace it has been. At 35 years old, Steve Sarkisian was the head man in Seattle, the University of Washington head coach, taking over after an 0-12 season and getting that ship right within 2-3 years and going to bowl games and doing great things. And then you say things like, I want to be the next Don James. This is a dream job. I want to be here for many, many years. And then basically overnight, you're gone to USC. So people in Seattle don't like Sarkisian for that two-faced talk. But personally, you want any human being to get right, whatever their issue may be, whatever their skeletons are in their closet. And really, he's a great football mind. He's done good things. He just needs to figure out and want to put the bottle down and get back to being the Steve Sarkisian that people liked and loved when he was doing good things in Seattle.
Well, yeah, well, this is the human element as far as the position is concerned. When we talk about head coaches, or we talk about, you know, athletes or players or coaches, you know, GMs alike that are in the limelight, we put them on this pedestal that things don't happen to them as they happen to us. And, you know, these people are human, and Steve Sarkisian is human. And one of the things you'd mentioned as far as, you know, the Seattle faithful, the Huskies, and how Steve Sarkisian left, you know, it wasn't on good standings. And I'll give you that, because it was, you know, it hurt. It hurt to have a name like Steve Sarkisian in Washington. And as you'd mentioned, you know, he's saying that he wanted to be the next Don James. But now that his life has come to fruition, and, you know, everything is put out there in the media, and they talked about, you know, how he was drunk on the field, possibly drunk on the field at Arizona State. One of the players had mentioned something like that. You know, now we can probably figure out why he left the University of Washington. I'm thinking that maybe, you know, there are some tough times going on at home, and we don't know. We don't know, you know, what was happening domestically or whatever, but if that were the case, if he were having problems, you know, in his personal life, and it meant that he needed a change of scenery, whether it was to salvage something or to get away, then, you know, him leaving the University of Washington wasn't that bad of a deal if he was going to Los Angeles for those reasons. And, you know, only he will know that story. But, you know, chronologically, the way things have transpired for him, it's tough. And I'm wishing him the best, because I find it hard to believe that he has a level of ignorance to where he would say those things at a mixer to alumni and boosters. And I just find it hard to believe that, you know, a head coach in his right mind would, you know, be inebriated in front of his athletes on the field. There were murmurs that he had alcohol in the locker rooms. I don't know if any of those things are true, but those are signs that somebody is trending for help. And I just hope that Coach Sarkisian gets that help that he deserves. I know that USC is mentioned that they're backing that, and, you know, they want him to get that help. And so let's hope that he gets it.
And Sean, looking back now, when I worked the USC-Washington State game in 2014 in Pullman, now people are saying that we're on that USC squad, that Sarkisian was drunk on the flight back to Los Angeles. And it's just, as you said, it's incredible that this guy would do this in front of his fellow coaches, in front of the players, the student athletes, in front of his boss, athletic director Pat Hayden, who now has to probably be looking over his shoulder for his job security, because Hayden elected to hire Sarkisian, and it's been nothing but trouble.
Yeah, you know, for Pat Hayden, all he did was defend Steve Sarkisian at every turn. And so when it got to this magnitude to where he couldn't defend him, he had to let him go. And I'm sure it was hard for Pat Hayden, you know, because as you were saying, this was his guy. But these guys have to move on, and they got to take a deep breath. And, you know, they got to play out the rest of the season. And let's make, you know, no mistake about this, Sean. The Huskies won that game. They played great football. So I don't want to take anything away, you know, saying that the Huskies didn't, you know, didn't win or the Huskies won because, you know, Steve Sarkisian wasn't doing this, that, or the other or whatever. I mean, those teams had the lineup and they had to play, and the Huskies did what they needed to do, and that was go down to Los Angeles and win a tough football game.
Did you have a chance to take a look at Aaron Levine's commentary from Cue It Up Sports Sunday evening? He basically said, look, I've thrown darts and daggers at this guy. I've joked about it, but the joking is now over. It's time to get serious. This is another human being, just like you and I have said, that this guy needs help. He's not a bad person. He just needs to make better choices and get his life right.
Well, you know, Aaron Levine, of course, a guest here on the Double, and Emmy Award-winning Aaron Levine. I love saying that. Yeah, you know, Aaron is spot on when he says that. I mean, there's the human element of this thing, and it's not a joking matter, you know. And, you know, we all wish the best for Coach Sarkisian and, you know, for anybody that's going through this. And so this isn't the way or the image that any program or any organization wants, and it's just unfortunate that it's happening to one of the biggest programs in the land. And so we're just hoping that USC can turn it around.
Sean, there was a great college football game with a team that is near and dear to your heart. And, of course, our Oregon Ducks insider, David Massey. The Oregon Ducks hosting the Washington State Cougars. And who would have thought that game would be the battle it turned out to be?
You know, I didn't. And as much as Oregon has shown signs that, you know, they're kind of on the decline, and that's really, really tough to say, I really didn't see the Oregon Ducks losing to Washington State. And the way that it happened, it just made it, oh, man, I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, it was sad to see, you know, and just a year ago, we're talking about a team that's been vying for the national title for the past, seems like 10 years. And then this happens, man. And, Wazoo, hey, hats off to the Cougs and you guys in the Palouse. You know, I'm just wondering what's next for the Oregon Ducks. I mean, if you're a college football fan, it was exciting to watch 45-38 double overtime game. But not only did Washington State win, they won in Eugene. And that, you know, I don't know, Sean. It's, you know, I don't know what's next.
Well, I think on the Cougars' side, it was a coming out party for young quarterback Luke Falk. 5 touchdowns, engineering drive after drive to maintain that score balance with the Ducks to fight back down 10 in the fourth quarter. Honestly, I turned it off when the Ducks scored again to go up 10. Like, yeah, it's over. It's fourth quarter. You're in Autzen. Not happening. And then I find out, like most people on social media, that the Cougars made the comeback, had the huge celebration on the field, still partying in the locker room, saw a video of the locker room celebration. They had Mike Leach on their shoulders. So it doesn't appear, of course, winning cures all, but it doesn't seem like the players, it seemed like they're very fond of their head coach, at least immediately after the victory.
So I'm glad that you mentioned that. So what do you think? Because we've had Mike Leach on the hot seat for quite some time and having his days numbered. Do you think that this win will actually buy him another year? Or, you know, let's say, dare I say, they play in the Apple Cup and, you know, they lose the Apple Cup. Is he gone? So, I mean, is this a staple win for Mike Leach?
It's definitely a staple win, one of the highest, if not the highest, of his tenure at Wazoo. But what's going to be key is that they need to get to that sixth win. They need to get to a bowl game, even if it's the garbage bag bowl. Who cares? You're at a bowl game. You're gaining some notoriety. You're getting money from the sponsors. That's the goal. You make progress, and they've been going backwards. And just take a look at how their season started in Pullman, losing to Portland State. And everybody thinks Leach is going to get fired or should, and the wheels are falling off. And it just goes to show you how in football, everybody overreacts way too quickly. The seasons are long. Even in college football, where they only get 12 games, the NFL, there's 16. You know, a team loses once, and everybody wants to jump off a bridge.
Well, and you're exactly right, Sean. But, you know, I think it could go the other way also. If a team wins one, then, you know, do we go into hysteria? And that's what we're talking about with Mike Leach. And, you know, and I know Luke Falk is the, you know, he's the up and coming. I mean, but my goodness, this guy's elbow is probably still in ice. He probably hasn't passed all week. 50 of 74 for 505 yards. 74 times you slung the ball. I mean, that is crazy. And, you know, and at what point do you just say, man, you know, we got to make some type of adjustment or something? I mean, do you keep going till his arm falls off?
Well, Mike Leach has always been about throwing the football all over the yard. And so that's not going to change anytime soon. Going back to his heyday at Texas Tech with Michael Crabtree doing great things there. You know, his air raid offense. And yeah, Falk's got to find a way to ice that arm 24/7 until Saturday rolls around.
Yeah, you know, the Cougars definitely abandoned the run. And, you know, I think they only had 195 yards of rushing. But, you know, if that's what they're going to hang their hat on, it's going to be tough because the Pac-12 loves, you know, to put the ball in the air and these teams make the adjustments. It's just been sad for the Oregon Ducks. I mean, I don't even know, again, who this team was. You're talking about first downs. You know, Wazoo had 31 first downs to Oregon's 18. You know, I mean, yeah, granted, Oregon rushed the ball well, and I don't know if they're trying to hide things as far as, you know, their quarterback situation is concerned. So you see an Oregon run a little bit more, but, you know, it's not the balanced attack that we're used to seeing. And so, you know, I know Helfrich is, you know, he's taking this with a grain of salt, or maybe hopefully he's not, because, you know, things have to get better. I know for me in my household, it's tough because, you know, gosh, I try to call my son and I won't call him because, you know, I know that it stings, man. It stings a lot. You know, I thought Utah was bad. Which was worse, losing to Utah or losing to Wazoo? I mean, it's, man, there's some tough times in Eugene.
Well, Sean, on Sunday, you were at O.co working for the television broadcast, the Oakland Raiders taking on the Denver Broncos, and those Broncos are still undefeated. What did you see on the field from the Raiders?
Well, you know, if you talk to the Raider faithful, because the Raider Nation is a passionate group, and they never, never, never like to lose. And so, you know, it's a tough pill to take. You know, we believe that, you know, we can actually play with the Denver Broncos and beat them. And, you know, that game was exciting. It was, you know, even though it was week five in the NFL, it felt like a playoff atmosphere football game. I mean, you saw the Denver Broncos coming in with the NFL's top-ranked defense. Now, there's no way, shape, or form that the Raiders should come out and do what they do because everything is still in the developmental stages. But what we saw is we saw two teams that played excellent defense. And so I know that, you know, those on the outside looking in are saying, hey, the Broncos beat the Raiders. What else is new? But I can tell you this, that there was a statement made in the NFL that when people say that the Raiders are on the comeback, the Raiders are really on the comeback. And, you know, they're not the pushover team. You know, Denver, they got a chance to see that firsthand, down 9-7 with 7 minutes left in the game. An errant pass by Derek Carr, 70-yard touchdown for the Denver Broncos, kind of put things a little out of reach. You know, two uncharacteristic field goal misses by Sebastian Janikowski, I believe of 38 and 41 yards. That never, ever happens. And, of course, you know, Latavius Murray comes out. He has, you know, an okay first half. We don't know what's going on. Jack Del Rio saying that he's a little dinged up a little bit. With all those things being said, the Raiders held Denver's offense out of the end zone. Think about that. We're talking about the Denver Broncos offense, and we held them out of the end zone. That is a step in the right direction. So, you know, I know nobody wants to talk about moral victories. I hate talking about moral victories, but the Raiders came to play, and whoever was there at O.co got a chance to hear playoff atmosphere football. Sean, I was excited for the first time. I mean, we just moved down and been down here for what, 9 years, Sean? So I missed the heyday, you know, of the Raiders going to the Super Bowl and being the best team in the AFC for 3 out of 4 years and all that stuff. And I've missed that crowd. But I tell you what, Sean, that crowd was unbelievable on how loud it was. And on that first drive, it was intense. It was exciting. 2-3, I know it sucks right now. 1-2 at home, that too. But with a bye week here, I'm excited to see how the Raiders turn things around. And I believe that they're going to get things moving here in the next few games.
Quarterback for the Broncos, Peyton Manning. Many people talking about how he can't sling the ball anymore. He's not throwing like he was 3, 5, 7 years ago. He's 40 years old. What are your thoughts? You just saw him in person. Can he still play quarterback at an elite level?
Yeah, I think so. I think Peyton Manning is still one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. One of the things, you know, we have to be careful when we say these types of things about, you know, a quarterback that's savvy as Peyton Manning. Here's the thing. He's come to the Denver Broncos, and he's given up a little bit of power over the past couple of years. And, you know, we're used to Peyton Manning. You know, when he was in Indianapolis, Peyton Manning was the one calling the meetings. Peyton Manning was the one saying that this is the script that we're going to use. And so now that he has Gary Kubiak there, you have a battle of wills, and Gary's saying that this is going to be my offense. I'm going to call the plays. This is how we're going to script things. And so, yeah, you have to think, for somebody like Peyton Manning, that's a tough pill to swallow. But Peyton doesn't have a big ego. It's just his mind getting used to having somebody else calling the plays. If you've noticed, we don't see a lot of the hand gestures and a lot of the animations that we saw in the years past of Peyton Manning. And, you know, it's a little bit different, but I think he's doing a great job. I think he's doing the best job that he possibly can. Now, here's the caveat. As much as I've talked the Denver Broncos up, and of course they're sitting 5-0 undefeated, with all that being said, with the number one defense and all of that, I still don't see the Denver Broncos being the best team in the AFC, and I see them taking their lumps as they enter into the playoffs.
Sean, did you notice that there was a game in Cincinnati on Sunday between the Bengals and some team named the Seattle Seahawks, who for 3 quarters looked like the Seattle Seahawks we all know and love?
Well, did I know that there was a game? Let me see. I'm right there on the field at O.co, and then all of a sudden, in the beginning of the game, I'm getting text from one Sean Wally. Boom, here we go. Boom, 24-7. And then all of a sudden, I get – this is the funniest thing. So as I'm on the sidelines, I have one of my buddies tap me, and he says, hey, the game's going into Cincinnati and Seattle is going into overtime. And I said, what? What in the world happened? You tell us. I mean, I know our Pacific Northwest listeners know, but the rest of us around the world and here in Northern California, we are dying to hear what happened in Cincinnati as the Seattle Seahawks just – I'm listening. What happened?
Sean, I think the 12s are still trying to figure that out. I mean, immediately after the game, head coach Pete Carroll said that he was baffled. He needed to look at the tape, look at the film, and figure everything out. He took the full blame because it wasn't just one thing to point to. You couldn't just say it was Russell Wilson's fault. You couldn't say it was Richard Sherman's fault. It was a combination of everything, including special teams. And when Seattle needed a single first down with 3.5 minutes roughly left in the ball game to seal the deal, couldn't get it. Seattle's final six possessions, all punts or turnovers.
Wow.
Not a recipe you want if you are trying to win a game. First three quarters, phenomenal. Seattle Seahawks are back football. The final quarter in overtime, they couldn't do anything. They couldn't stop Cincinnati. They couldn't get a first down when they needed to. They didn't put any points on the board the entire fourth quarter or overtime.
Yeah, well,
and there were some amazing plays made along the way by the Bengals, and you're going to have those in a game when a team is making a comeback and doing things right. Like, I don't know if you saw on the highlights, but there was a corner route ran perfectly by super tight end Eifert that Andy Dalton, the quarterback, placed that ball so perfectly. I mean, wasn't it Sherman and Chancellor were blanketing the guy, but the ball was 2 inches beyond either of their reach.
Yeah, it was perfectly placed, and I saw that ball, and you know, that's what makes the NFL the NFL. And you know what's funny is even though it's early in the season, those types of catches that you are mentioning from Eifert are the types of things that were happening in Seattle's favor for the past couple of years. I mean, things had to be perfect in order, you know, for Seattle to get those wins, and they were perfect, and they got it done. Now it's starting to happen to them a little bit. And I mentioned last week that teams aren't scared anymore. And, you know, once your dirty laundry is aired, and I know that up in Seattle in the Pacific Northwest, you know, I've said it before, you're always the last to know when your team is the one that's on the decline. But when your dirty laundry is aired as far as disgruntled players, and you as fans can knock it off and say, oh, no, it doesn't matter, it doesn't mean anything, Pete Carroll says this, Pete Carroll says that. Well, when that happens and injuries happen and people want more money, guys, I'm telling you, those are signs that there are, you know, there's a little hole in the dike and it's becoming bigger and bigger. And once people see that, they start rushing at it. And they start pinpointing it. And no matter what you do as a team and trying to hide it, you can't. You know, there's the talk about, I was looking on Facebook today and somebody had mentioned the fact of Russell Wilson and Ciara and the relationship and how, you know, all of a sudden those things that he used to study long and hard in the film room, now he has to put a little bit more of that time into his relationship because he's hunting that relationship. He's trying to make things better. And I thought, that's a little bit far-fetched. But wait a minute. Is it that far-fetched? You know, so when you put those things into perspective and you look at how Seattle still looks like the team, that tough team, but when all the balls were rolling in their favor on the past couple of years, even up until last week, for crying out loud. But, you know, it's going to start swinging a little bit into some of the other teams' favor. And so Seattle's got an uphill battle. They're still a top team, no doubt about it. But can they overcome the NFC West? And, you know, this year, I just see Arizona. And I know my brother, he laughed at me when I said, hey, man, the Arizona Cardinals this year, you know, these guys are not playing. And they're going to right the ship from last year. And they're going to remember that. And Bruce Arians is not the type of person that's going to forget. You know, Seattle's got their work cut out for them, Sean.
Well, Sean, the only thing I will come back with there is, let's not forget, and I told people this on Facebook today, yesterday, that, you know, they're wanting to jump off the cliff, and or people that aren't Seahawks fans saying, ha-ha, I told you Seattle was done. Timeout, first of all. Seattle was 3-3 last year. They're 2-3 right now. They went on Sunday at home against another undefeated team, the Carolina Panthers. They're 3-3, exact same record. Things aren't going super smooth right now. They weren't going smooth at all this time last season until Percy Harvin was sent packing. And then even then, they had to have a come-to-Jesus meeting after the loss at Kansas City. And then everything was smooth sailing from there. So, granted, all teams would like to be 5-0 right now. But the moral of the NFL season is, how good are you playing late November, December, into January, if you're still playing in January? Because if you're not playing well then, you're going to be done. Playing well in September doesn't necessarily mean everything is going to be roses and chocolates in January.
And you're exactly right. You know, but here's the problem is you have an Arizona team that remembers last year. You have an Arizona team that did not expect, they didn't expect in their wildest dreams to be up four games with 4 weeks to go and the bottom just fall out. Now, if Arizona was a bumpkin team that just said, hey, we don't know how to finish this year, or we haven't gone back to the drawing board or the chalkboard to make sure that these things don't happen, then if that happened again, then they don't deserve to be in the NFL. What I'm saying is this. Arizona sees Seattle coming. Arizona sees that, hey, there no lead is big enough. And I think they did take it lightly. I think last year Arizona didn't expect Seattle to run the table. Who did? Seattle won 10 of 11 games. Think about that. 10 of 11 games that they won last year to get to the Super Bowl. To get themselves into the Super Bowl or get themselves into the playoffs, 10 out of 11 games. And I'm telling you, the Arizona Cardinals are not going to let that repeat. And, you know, Seattle's going to have to, I believe that they have a chance of getting back to the playoffs. But here's what's going to be the difference. Now the 12s get taken out of it. When you don't have home field, life is different. And so what Seattle's going to have to figure out is how to play on the road. And that's something that they, you know, is a little bit shaky for them. And so, you know, once you take that home field and the rest of the NFL bowed down and they respect the 12s, and I get that. I understand that. But if they do not get that home field, meaning Seattle, season is done. And so now you have to start to figure out what went wrong. Who do we pay? You know, because we're going to be in this – you know, this whole, again, if we continue to pay players crazy money, which they're going to have to visit this whole Cam Chancellor thing at the end of the year, it's going to be interesting to see how Seattle, you know, makes it through this.
Well, Sean, as a Seahawk fan, I welcome the Arizona Cardinals. We still have not one, but two games against the Redbirds from Arizona. And to be the best, what do you have to do, Sean? You have to beat the best. And right now, the Cardinals are the best in the NFC West, possibly in the NFC. Green Bay will have something to say about that. And heck, even Carolina still undefeated. So a long way to go, and those are going to be good battles. Hopefully, the Cardinals are at full strength. Hopefully, Carson Palmer is around. So it's mano a mano, your best against our best. Let's put the best 11 out there and see what happens.
And, you know, and that's what Arizona is banking on. They're saying that our 11 or our 22 is better than your 22. And we didn't get a chance to prove that, but we will prove that this year. And, you know, again, the way Bruce Arians is he's the type of person that he will find a way to motivate his team. And I know Pete Carroll does it week after week, and he's considered an NFL genius now as of recent. But the way Bruce Arians is teaching his football team right now, they are not letting off the gas. And if they are healthy, getting a chance to play against the Seattle Seahawks, I think the outcome's going to be a little different. It's not going to be that cakewalk that happened last year with Stanton and whoever the other quarterback was that, you know, it could have been a high school JV-er for crying out loud. The outcome was the same. But if Carson Palmer is healthy, then this Arizona Cardinal team is definitely the team to beat in the NFL.
Well, Sean, you mentioned two words there, high school. And I had another chance on Friday to work for SWX, run handheld camera on the field in Yakima. To a battle between the West Valley Rams taking on the Eisenhower Cadets. And let me paint the picture for you and put your coach hat on if you can dust it off. I'm sure it's buried somewhere there in the closet. Former assistant football coach you once were. And, of course, Clover Park High School in Lakewood, Washington. West Valley up by 3 with the ball. 4th and 1 from the 1. They have 1 yard to go for a touchdown or kick an easy field goal to go up by 6, which would then force Eisenhower to have to score a touchdown. In that situation, West Valley goes for the 4th and 1 to punch it in the end zone and gets stuffed. So now not only can Eisenhower tie it with a field goal or win it with a touchdown. Your thoughts?
So let me get this right. So West Valley has the ball. They're going in. They're up by 3. How much time is on the clock?
There was roughly a minute 15 in the fourth quarter.
Huh. Yeah, I don't understand that logic. So, you know, with a minute 14, and I understand that high school rules are similar to college. Whenever you get a first down, the clock stops. But unless that quarterback from Eisenhower is on his way to Division I, I'm taking my chances with the field goal. I'm kicking the field goal, going up 6, and I'm squibbing that ball to where, you know, when we kick it off, to where, you know, it allows my special teams kickoff team to recover and get to the ball. And it doesn't allow, more importantly, it doesn't allow the kickoff return team to, you know, come up with a strong return and set up their wedge. Yeah. I don't know why they went for it. That's baffling to me. So what happened?
Yeah, that was a major head scratcher for me being right there on the field, and Eisenhower driving down for either the tying field goal or the winning touchdown. Their quarterback, for the second time in the ball game, about 20 seconds left, throws up basically just a chuck it prayer, take you back to the schoolyard, playing 500 or flies up. That's what that ball was like. It was just chucked straight up in the air. And there were more defenders back there for West Valley than his offensive receivers. Interception, ball game. Not only do you not tie the game, you don't take the lead, and you lose on your home field.
Man, well, you know, those are the types of things that, you know, coaches remember. And, you know, that's going to stick with that coach for quite some time. But that's what makes high school football, you know. And, you know, Friday night lights are always exciting, and I'm sure Eisenhower was, you know, stoked about the whole thing. And, you know, but it was a good game for you to actually be there and record, man.
Well, Friday night lights this week on SWX becoming Thursday night lights. I get to stay in town here in the Tri-Cities as Richland travels to Kamiakin, a battle over in Kennewick. And man, potentially extremely busy 4 days for me, as I may be working for ESPN Friday and Saturday for the Oregon University of Washington game at Husky Stadium. And then there's another chance on Sunday I could be working Carolina at Seattle for Fox.
Now, is there some type of a trophy for the Kamiakin Richland game? I know that, you know, Pasco is also, you know, Pasco High is there as well. But, I mean, is there some type of little cup or jug or axe or whatever for this Richland-Kamiakin game?
Other than crosstown bragging rights, I'm not aware of anything. But, heck, I'll definitely look into it and report back to you on Monday.
Well, it sounds like you've got an action-packed weekend. And, you know, of course, that Oregon University of Washington game, that should be exciting as well. You know, I don't expect the Oregon Ducks to actually have a tough time. But, you know, the University of Washington has some confidence, of course, beating USC. And so that should be a fun one up there at Montlake as well. And, of course, Carolina and Seattle. Whew. Man. So that should be a big one as well, man. I mean, what are your thoughts on that game?
It's an exciting weekend for football in Seattle as both the Huskies and Seahawks host home games. The Huskies looking to get off the schneid against the Oregon Ducks. It's been something like 87 years since the Huskies have beaten the Ducks, and they're hoping to get off the schneid there. And then across the lake, downtown Seattle, CenturyLink Field, hey, Cam Newton has very rarely had a good game against Seattle's defense, and this time he's coming to Seattle. So, yes, they're playing well, but they're also without their top receiver. Kelvin Benjamin got hurt early in the season. And, you know, hey, it's an undefeated team against a hungry and almost desperate Seahawks team that needs this win more than Carolina does. So I look for the home field advantage to play big and Seattle to come out firing on all cylinders and right the wrong that happened Sunday in Cincinnati.
Well, I mean, that was one thing that you kind of brushed over a little bit. The Carolina Panthers are undefeated. And so when you are winning football games, it brings a little bit of a different level of confidence. And Seattle's been desperate for quite some time since week one, since they got the first loss. And, you know, I that should be a fun game to watch. You know, how Cam Newton comes in now as what could be considered the favorite since you're 5-0. How does he lead his team, and how does Seattle overcome the adversities from losing a tough contest to another undefeated team the week prior? And so, yeah, that should be awesome up there at the Clink.
Well, Sean, that is exactly why we're getting, for the second straight Seattle Seahawks game, the A crew for Fox will be in town. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman on the call, and the entire Fox Sports A crew staff.
You know, it's always fun to have those guys have Stromf in the gang coming your way, giving some great stats behind the scenes. Of course, with Buck and Aikman calling for that game. Yeah, that you're getting the best of the best there. So have fun there, my friend.
We need to send a big thank you to Ryan Divish, our big-time guest tonight, Seattle Mariners beat writer for the Seattle Times. Follow him on Twitter at Ryan Divish. And a big thank you to our IT guru, Kevin in Everett, doing great things to keep the DSX Studios alive and kicking.
Well, yeah, most definitely have to do that. And a big shout out to Kevin as well. But, you know, Sean, before we go, I did want to mention there's some big things in NCAA that are going on. A lot of things we haven't touched on, but I wanted to give respect where respect is due. The old ball coach, Steve Spurrier, just coming out recently and saying that this is his last year, 70 years old, of coaching. The old ball coach is going to be hanging it up in South Carolina, and we wish him the best, you know, after his retirement. He's had some good teams, man. I think back to those Florida teams and how they were so wound up in national titles and the whole nine. And so hats off to Coach Steve Spurrier and his retirement.
Yeah, you know, eventually – the guys that we've known and seen on TV for decades, you know, we all unfortunately have to get older and at one point or another, people have to decide to hang it up and either retire or move into something else. And apparently it's that time for Steve Spurrier.
No doubt about it, man. And so, man, a big show, as you had mentioned, Ryan Divish, special thanks to having him on and, you know, talking Mariners stuff and Montana and, you know, Major League Baseball. And so, you know, awesome show again, Sean Wally, for us talking about our favorite teams in the NFL, collegiate as well. And so, man, it's been a good one, man. So I don't know what number this one is, but we are moving right along. Be sure to tune in to On the Double every Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can download the app BBS Radio, and you'll click on Station 2 to catch us live every Monday, or you can go to bbsradio.com/DSX and, you know, catch us there. You can also catch us. You can also go to double-s-express.com to get some of our archives as well. Sean Wally, anything else?
Just what they call in the business a little tease for next week. A former basketball player in Seattle, among other cities, that has the nickname The Glove may very well be our big-time guest Monday night.
Well, man, we definitely look forward to that. And of course, we always bring big-time guests here on The Double. So, you know, what else is new, man? I look forward to getting a chance to talk with GP. Of course, we're trying to lock that up. And, you know, be sure to tune in next week. Whew. So another one in the book, Sean Wally. You know, as we always say here at the Double S Express, you're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope it's nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production. For Don Newsom in Paradise, California, Sean Wally in the Pacific Northwest on the west side, and yours truly at the EG Studios here in Elk Grove, California, you've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. You know what time it is. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.